Blog Talk Radio.
Exchange Book Club for the next several weeks. We're the home of the book club. The radio show, of course, will resume in its natural format when we get done with the book. So every Wednesday night at 7:30, we are pulling up a seat, bringing us a cup of nice tea or a glass of wine or whatever the case may be. And we are going chapter by chapter through the Sisterhood Exchange, the paperback version. And so far, so good. And I believe that it gets better each week. We've had some wonderful folk to call in and share their insights and share their perspectives on what this whole Sisterhood Exchange experience is all about and how important it is. And I'm just really grateful that I get to every week to get onto this show and to discuss this really important book that poured through me. You know, again, I say my name is on it, but I just took dictation from the universe because the words just flowed through in a very easy way, and I'm just really grateful that I get to share it with you. So tonight we are actually up to session 3 already. We already did 2 sessions of the Sisterhood Exchange Book Club. For those of you who might be joining us for the first time tonight, you can always go to the website for the radio show and listen to the archives of the previous shows if you want to get caught up. And while you're there, please do me a favor and click on that blue follow tab, because that helps me to see who the followers are and to just keep you up to date with what's going on with the show from that website. So click on that blue follow tab for me while you're on the website. And again, you can listen to the archives if you would like to get caught up on the previous sessions, session 1 and session 2. Before we get into session 3, we'll do a brief recap for folk who might be joining us for the first time tonight. But I am just having a ball. I am having a ball discussing this book. I had a ball when I wrote it, and I'm having a ball discussing it because it's just, I think it's time. It's just time for this really rich, important discussion about sisterhood. Sisterhood has been in the news a lot, you know, over the past several months. It's been in the news a lot before then, but especially over the past several months with, you know, the things that are going on with different reality shows and just women's reaction to those reality shows. And so that aspect of sisterhood, I think, has gotten enough play. And it's time for us, those of us who know better, to have, you know, the kind of conversation that sisterhood deserves. So before we get into chapter 3, let me let you guys know that there is a Facebook page. And I encourage you, if you're on Facebook, to like that page, to click on the like tab. And that way you'll be kept up to date with what's going on that Facebook page. It's a fun page. I keep it, you know, fresh and upbeat, inspiring, motivating, sometimes challenging. And I always post the information for the radio show on the Facebook page. If you would like to call in with a question, a comment, or brilliant insight, I always love brilliant insights. The number to call in is 646-595-2081. Once you do that, press 1. I'm not sure if they're giving the prompt for you, you know, if you want to join me on the air or not. So just in case it doesn't, if you want to join me on the air, press the number 1, and I'll get an indication, and I'll bring you on. The other thing I want to let you guys know is the book. Again, the book is in paperback, and it's an entirely different book than the hardback version. The hardback is a wonderful book, and I really thought that when I wrote the hardback that I had said all that God wanted me to say on the topic of sisterhood. But when it got time to release it in paperback, in meditation and in prayer, I started to get all these epiphanies and insights about sisterhood, additional stuff, and, you know, it was really making sense. So I started jotting it down like I do. I'm a writer, And what I realized was that the paperback version was intended to be an entirely different book than the hardback. And so I paid attention and did what Spirit was instructing me to do. And so the paperback version of The Sisterhood Exchange is an entirely different book. It includes everything that's in the hardback, but so much more. There's so much more information. It's still a small book, which I love, because, you know, you can read it in one sitting, you know, for maybe take an hour, hour and a half to get through the entire book. But it's formatted differently. It's formatted into two parts. Part one is The Sisterhood of Self, and that talks about who we are as it relates to how we treat ourselves, you know, as within. And then part two goes into sister to sister, because as within, so without. How I treat myself is how I treat other women. The thoughts that I hold about myself have a huge impact on the way I think about other women and the way that I interact with other women. So, yeah, it's two parts. Part one is the SOS, and when that came through in meditation, you know, I was like, okay, when a SOS is typically a distress signal, and there's a sense of urgency associated with it. And, you know, what occurred to me was, because of everything that's going on with sisterhood, there should be a sense of urgency about this discussion about sisterhood. So the SOS is The Sisterhood of Self, and then part two again is sister to sister. So tonight, let me do a quick recap of what the first few chapters were about. Because the book is so small, it doesn't take long to go through the chapters, so it won't take away from anything tonight to go back to those previous chapters. And I like, on topics like this, repetition I think is important. So even for me, and I wrote it and I read it a number of times, and it's still, you know, I read the book sometimes, and I still get different new insights from reading the book. So I'm saying all that to say I'm going to go back to the first couple of chapters before we go into chapter three tonight. So the first thing we went over on the first night was we went into the preface, and that talks about just what sisterhood is, you know, and essentially it's one of the most powerful aspects of being a woman. And it's something that we're all born with, of course, and it takes on the flavor of what we're most consistently exposed to. And so in the preface, I talked about how little girls, you know, depending on, you know, who the women are that they're most exposed to, and what how those women treat other women, whether they're around women who gossip and backstab other women, that's what those little girls learn. Little girls aren't born, you know, gossiping and backstabbing about other little girls. They're just not. You know, they're born with this natural inclination to get along, to want to spend time together, to want to, you know, do good things together. This all of this other stuff that you know has given sisterhood a bad name, those are learned behaviors, and that's essentially what we talked about in the preface. We talked about how you know there's a vicious cycle that happens when little girls are exposed to women who backstab and gossip, and if that's all that they're exposed to, then they grow up thinking that that's all there is to sisterhood. They grow up believing that that's the way women are supposed to behave, that, you know, the perceptions that women can't get along, that they can't work together, they can't trust each other, et cetera, et cetera. Little girls grow up believing that those things are fact instead of perception and just, you know, someone's beliefs. But if they're exposed to women who, you know, gossip, backstab, et cetera, but they're also exposed to women who don't, you know, if that's what's going on in their home, but they go to school and they're exposed to, you know, positive, uplifting women at school, or they belong to an organization, or they, you know, at the neighbor's house, they get to see something different, then the less the negative behavior has the ability to take hold and convinces them that that's all there is to it. So what else did we talk about in the preface? We talked about how all women have this SOS. It's a phrase. I'm going to say I coined it because I wrote the book, but again, Spirit sent it through me. The SOS. Every woman has an SOS, the sisterhood of self. And a woman's sisterhood of self, her SOS, is either active or inactive. In order for it to help her to see the beauty and the natural beauty of sisterhood, it has to be activated. And so one of the other things we talked about the seven principles of the sisterhood of self. There are seven principles to the sisterhood of self. And those seven principles are, again, number one, every woman has an SOS that is either active or inactive. The second one is the SOS is activated by spending time in the silence daily. And we talked about that, I think, either last week, no, the week before last. Just talked about how important it is every single day to spend some time in the silence, just time with yourself, to turn off the TV, turn off the radio, turn off the social media, and just spend time with yourself. There's so much stuff that we have inside of us, good, awesome, incredible stuff, that we sometimes go an entire lifetime without tapping into it because we're so busy with all the external noise that we don't give ourselves the opportunity to get to know what we're really about, what we really bring to the table. And we forget about even discovering what our purpose is if we're not spending time in the silence. Okay, the third principle says self-forgiveness. Self-forgiveness elevates an active SOS. So once you've started spending time in the silence, one of the gifts that we end up being able to give to ourselves is forgiving ourselves for whatever poor judgment or mistakes that, you know, we made in our past. We start to develop this compassion and understanding that, you know, when we know better, we do better. And so self-forgiveness becomes a part of that, of the dynamics that exist with our SOS. The fourth one is the effective use of thoughts and words sustains an active SOS. And we're going to go into that in greater detail tonight because the chapter that we're talking about tonight is Your Thoughts, Your Life. So the effective use of thoughts and words sustains an active SOS. So it's not enough to, you know, spend time in the silence. It's not enough to do the self-forgiveness part. You have to continue to work towards building your SOS. You have to continue to work towards making it all that it can be because it's a wonderful part of a woman's life and it determines the quality of her life. So the effective use of thoughts and words sustains an active SOS. The next one, where am I, number five, an active SOS thrives in gratitude. And I have a chapter on gratitude in the book that we're going to talk about in the next few weeks. Gratitude is a game changer. When you live your life with gratitude as a constant feature, things change. The way your days roll out, your day, that changes. The quality of your day changes because your focus is just entirely different. It's just entirely different. I talked last week about, you know, just the power of keeping a gratitude journal. It's such a beautiful gift that you can give to yourself to keep a gratitude journal, because what the gratitude journal does is it forces you to be on the lookout for gratitude from the time you wake up in the morning until you go to bed at night. Because at the end of the day with your gratitude journal, you are to write five things, at least five things that happened that day that you're grateful for. And you can write, again, it's at least, so you can write as many as you want. And sometimes, you know, you will have one of those days where it'll be a challenge for you just to get down the basics, food, clothing, shelter, you know, whatever. And then there will be some days where you just can't stop your pen from moving because you had a day that you were just overloaded with things for which to be grateful. And the thing about gratitude is the more you focus on gratitude, the more you make it a part of your daily practice, the more you attract things into your life for which to be grateful. So it's a really powerful, sweet part of this whole SOS and just life in general. The next principle is an active SOS provides access to inner splendor, which reveals life purpose. Every single one of us has a life purpose. Every single one of us. We are here on purpose, with a purpose, and, you know, I call it our inner splendor. But there's this information, this wisdom, all of this, you know, data personal to us that exists within us that we can only access by going within. We can only access it by going within. And then once we activate our SOS and we're in the habit of, you know, self-forgiveness, we're immersing ourselves in gratitude, it is natural for, if we haven't already discovered our life purpose, it is natural for it to start to reveal itself with more intensity. It's already been revealing itself to you because our lives give us clues. You know, we can look back over our lives in retrospect and see some of the things that we're drawn to, and those are clues to what our purpose is. Those are clues to that thing that's inside of us that has our name on it, that we're here and that we're supposed to be doing, right? And the more that we start to just focus and have an intention about this SOS, the more our life purpose becomes apparent. And even if we have discovered what our life purpose is and we're taking steps towards manifesting it, spending time in the silence and doing these, becoming familiar with these seven principles, it helps our focus on our purpose to become like laser sharp, and opportunities and resources and people and information and everything that we need in order to make that purpose manifest fully in our lives. Those things start to show up too, because what we focus on is what we attract into our life. And then number seven says the quality of a woman's SOS determines the quality of all her other sisterhood exchanges. And it's, again, that as within, so without. Because the way that I treat myself, the type of time that I spend with myself, is it quality time or not? Am I just every day, you know, immersed in the TV, the radio, the social media, the texting, et cetera, et cetera? Am I doing all of this external stuff and not nurturing, not cherishing, not honoring this gift that's inside of me? If that's the case, then the way that I interact with other women, and I talked about this in the preface, it comes from this false sense of self. Because when we are not connected, or when we're not nurturing, we're born connected, but when we're not nurturing the connection that we have with ourselves, when we're not paying attention to the type of energy that's swirling within us, it has a great impact on how we interact with other women. And we're operating from this false sense of self. We're operating from this external thing that says that everything that's going on outside of us is what defines us. Our job defines us. You know, our relationships define us. Our material possessions define us. You know, what other people think about us, that defines us. That's operating from our false sense of self. And as long as our focus is on those things have tremendous power over how we live our lives, because those things have to remain, you know, in a certain condition in order for us to quote unquote remain happy. Because if something changes out there, you know, and that's what we're focused on, then, oh my goodness, it affects how we feel about ourselves. But when we're living from the inside out, when we're living from the inside out, connecting with ourselves in the silence, self-forgiving, thriving in gratitude, and everything else that goes along with the SOS, then, you know, a job can go, and you know, we can feel the sadness that comes along with it, but without being devastated by it. We can understand that, you know what, maybe that had to move out of my life because there is something better that's on its way. And perhaps, you know, I was supposed to make the move some time ago, and for whatever reason I did not. And now, you know, the situation has presented itself so that I can attract something different in my life. So activating the SOS, it just really helps you start to look at life with a new set of lenses on your eyes, you know. I also talked about how the SOS is a lot like faith, you know. There's a misconception about faith. There's a belief by some people that, you know, some people have faith and some people don't. But faith is one of those, we're all born with faith. We're all born with faith. But what we do with it determines whether it helps us or not. Because we can go our entire life with our faith inside never touched. And what's the saying? Faith without works is dead. If that faith is always there, it is always there. But it responds to our belief about what it can do. It definitely responds to our belief about what it can do. And, you know, the other part of that saying is, with a mustard seed-sized bit of faith, we can move mountains. We can move mountains. And then the thing with faith is, the more you use it, the stronger it gets. The more you use it, the more aware you are of it and what it can do, and the more capable you become of using it to make changes in your life. And faith is not a religious quality. It's a spiritual quality, because all people have it. All people have this thing called faith. They may not call it faith, There may be people who have never stepped foot in a church who have a tremendous amount of faith, but they're not calling it faith. Does it mean that they don't have faith? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. They may call it, you know, an expectation or whatever the case may be, but it's still the same quality. And I use that as an analogy for the sisterhood of self, the SOS, because every single woman has an SOS, but if it's not been activated, then it's not being put to use. And that's one of the main things that we talked about with that chapter. So I'm going to take a deep breath because I have said a lot of words in these first, I don't know how many minutes I've been on here, but I have said a lot of words, so let me breathe for a minute. And so we're going to go on to chapter 3. Actually, no, I didn't do, last week we talked about disconnect to connect. Yeah, we talked about how important it is to, you know, to take a step back from everything that's going on in our external world. And it seems like these days, like, everybody's, you know, caught up with the external stuff, with the Facebook, with the Twitter, with the texting, with the Instagram, with everything. So, you know, and when something becomes popular, you know, we tell ourselves that it's okay, you know, because everybody's doing it, then, you know, it's okay for us to spend this amount of time involved in this external stuff. And so last week's chapter just talked about how important it is just to unplug, you know, just temporarily. I'm not saying that we're supposed to give it up. You know, I'm on Facebook and I'm on Twitter, and, you know, I think that when I learn Instagram, my daughter's going to show me what to do with that. I'll be on Instagram because there are things that I need to promote. But I have fun on Facebook and Twitter, you know, and essentially what I'm saying is, and we had a good discussion about it last week, is if we're on it to the extent that it is causing us to lose focus on who we are and we're looking to those things for validation, if we're posting on Facebook, you know, in order for our quote-unquote friends to quote-unquote like us, and that is feeling some need, some internal need for us, then it's time for us to take a look at it, because that contributes, that adds to our false sense of self, because that's not who we are. That's not who we are. And when it gets to that level, then, you know, it's definitely distracting you from doing what you're here to do, you know. So that's essentially what that conversation was about last week on disconnect to connect. So let me just tell you guys that if you want to call in with a comment, question, or a brilliant insight about the Sisterhood Exchange book, the number to call in is 646-595-2081. Press 1 if you want to join me on the air. For tonight's discussion on a chapter called Your Thoughts, Your Life, and for those of you with the book, the page number is 21. And speaking of the book, it is available on Amazon.com. It's available in paperback. If you want to be able to get it, you know, immediately so that you can catch up and have it available while you're participating in the book club, you can get the ebook version. The price for the ebook is $4.99. The price for the paperback is $10 and change. I think it went back up to $12. I'm not sure that if it remains. It's between $10 and $12 on Amazon. And then if you want an autographed copy, you can get that from my website, which is michellehollinger.com, and that costs $10. Okay, so tonight's conversation on Your Thoughts, Your Life, before I get into that, I wanted to discuss a couple of other things that I think really tie into it well. I had the opportunity last night to go and experience. That's the best word to describe what this was. I had the opportunity to go and experience Cheryl Boone Isaacs. And Cheryl Boone Isaacs is the president of the Academy of Motion Pictures and whatever that other part of that long name is. She's the woman who's the president of the Academy Awards. Okay, she's the first black to hold the position, and she's the third woman to hold the position. And I'm a freelance writer for the South Florida Times newspaper, so my daughter, who's a photographer, and I covered this event for the Miami International Film Festival. And Cheryl Boone Isaacs was there, and she spoke for about a little over an hour, and so much of what she had to say just reminded me of what tonight's topic is about, Your Thoughts, Your Life, just how important our thoughts are. Because when I heard her just talk about, you know, the journey of her life that led to her holding the position that she has. It became so apparent to me that, you know, she was, number one, probably raised in a household where her parents understood the power of thought, because, you know, she went away to college in the, she's in her mid-60s, I think she's 65 or 66. So she went away to college in, you know, in the 1960s, and she studied political science. After she graduated college, she wasn't sure what she wanted to do, so she became a flight attendant, and she got a chance to see the world. And she said, in her words, that she bounced around. And she, there were a lot of film students in the audience last night, and the advice that she gave to them was just profound, in my opinion. And she encouraged them to also bounce around in pursuit of their purpose. She said that young people face so much pressure, you know, from parents, from instructors, from family members, to figure out right away what it is that they want to do with their lives. She said, and that's not always the case. And she really is a big proponent of bounce, quote unquote, bouncing around, you know, until you figure out what it is that, you know, you're here to do. Because like I always say, each one of us has a purpose. We're here on purpose with a purpose. And sometimes we don't realize right away, you know, sometimes, you know, we go through college and we major in whatever, and we get out of college and we discover that, you know, we still haven't found our purpose. And the biggest message that she gave to those kids, to all of us last night, was that's okay. That's okay. And the other thing that she said a number of things, and if you guys want to read the article, I'll post it on my website after it gets published. It gets published tomorrow, as a matter of fact. I'll make sure it's on there when it's available. But the other thing she talked about was how important it is to not try, but to do. To not try, but to do. And when you are in control of your thoughts, when you recognize just how powerful they are, and you have the ability to use them to advance your purpose, to move you forward with your life, that whole message of not trying but doing takes on even greater meaning. It goes to an even higher level. And so she talked a lot about that last night. This lady, she followed her passion. She's always loved movies. And so she ended up going to Hollywood. She followed her brother, who was already in the industry. But she went out there to California not really knowing what she was going to do. But she knew that it was necessary for her to do it. She believed that there was something there for her to do, and that in order for her to do it, she had to be there. And so long story short, she ended up working in publicity. And the first movie that she worked on was Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which was directed by Steven Spielberg, which went on to gross over $300 million worldwide. And from that point forward, her career path just really included her being able to express herself and express her passion. And one of the things that she talked about over and over and over last night was, you know, what we say to ourselves and how important it is, again, for us to do instead of try. Try is just talking about it, thinking about it, wondering what might happen. Doing says, you know what, I might fall flat on my face, but guess what? And she said this too. If you're moving in a direction and it's not working out for you, make a U-turn and keep making U-turns until you find out where you're supposed to be. Keep making you, and she said, you know what, it will all work out fine. And she's an example of that, because here she is, a woman who graduated college, not sure what she wanted to do, ended up being a flight attendant, went out to Hollywood, not knowing what she was going to do, and now this lady is the president of the Academy Awards all these years later. So I wanted to share that with you all. I thought it was extremely powerful. And then the other thing I wanted to share comes from one of my favorite books, and this book is called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, and it's all small stuff. And I thought this chapter is especially apropos for what we're talking about, because it really helps to put it in perspective how important it is for us to get control of our thoughts and to learn to use our thoughts to, you know, advance ourselves and to do what we're here to do. And don't think I'm getting morbid on you, but the chapter that I'm going to read from this book is called Imagine Yourself at Your Own Funeral. And it starts, this strategy is a little scary for some people, but universally effective at reminding us of what's most important in our lives. When we look back on our lives, how many of us are going to be pleased at how uptight we were? Almost universally, when people look back on their lives while on their deathbed, they wish that their priorities had been quite different. With few exceptions, people wish that they had not sweated the small stuff so much. Instead, they wish that they had spent more time with the people and activities that they truly loved and less time worrying about aspects of life that, upon deeper examination, really don't matter all that much. Imagining yourself at your own funeral allows you to look back at your life while you still have the chance to make some important changes. And the author of this book is Richard Carlson, and he actually passed away several years ago when he was in his 40s. And this book is extremely profound, and I think that that particular chapter really just helps us to, you know, to really take a step back and remind ourselves that, you know what, this really is not a dress rehearsal. This really is not a dress rehearsal. And we have an opportunity with the life that we've been given to really live it in a way that reflects who we really are. And that goes back to our thoughts, the thoughts that we have day in and day out, day in and day out. And one of the things that this chapter reminds me is that, you know, we think that we have forever to get this thing right. We really do. But if you sit down, you know, and give yourself the gift of that activity and imagine yourself, excuse me, at your own funeral, take it a step further. What are some things that you want people to be able to say about you at your funeral? What are some things that you want to have already accomplished at your funeral? What are some things that, you know, you want the people who are there to celebrate your homegoing, what are some things that you want them to take away from that funeral service that is going to serve them as they continue to move forward? I'm breathing on that one, y'all. I am breathing on that one. Okay, so let me get into my book, The Sisterhood Exchange, the paperback version. And the chapter, again, is Your Thoughts, Your Life. And it's on page 21. Again, the number to call in if you'd like to call with a question, comment, or brilliant insight, the number is 646-595-2081. Press 1 if you want to join me on the air with a question, comment, or brilliant insight. All right, so Your Thoughts, Your Life. Many of you avoid the silence by turning on the TV as soon as you enter a room, whether you're watching it or not. Driving in silence is out of the question, so the radio provides background noise that prevents silence from taking over your ride. Waiting anywhere is an excuse to pull out the smartphone and peruse social media. Anything to occupy your mind so that one of the most powerful aspects of silence cannot have its way, paying attention to your thoughts. That's one of the things we talked about last week, but with, you know, just this preoccupation, this obsession with, you know, everything external. We go out to dinner with our family, and everybody around the table, you know, you look around the restaurant, folks have their smartphones out. You know, we're supposed to be out spending time with each other, and, you know, we're consumed by what's going on Facebook or Twitter or whatever. So the next paragraph says, it takes courage to examine your thoughts, because what's the sense of examining your thoughts unless you plan to do something about them? Your thoughts are not only responsible for the life you currently live, they will also determine the life that you will be living next year, 5 years after that, and 10 after that. Here's the thing about thoughts. Our thoughts create our reality. You know, that may sound airy-fairy, that may sound, you know, new age-ish, but it's absolutely positively true. There are, I don't know how many references to, you know, the power of thought in the Bible and in other scriptures. It is absolutely positively true. And when we realize just how powerful our thoughts are, we can take control of our thoughts. It's as simple as that. It is as simple as that. It's as simple as you know, taking control of our thoughts changes our lives. It's not simple to take control of your thoughts. It takes intention. It takes practice. It takes consistency. It's not simple. It's really not. I want to be honest with you about that. It is really not simple. But it's worth it. It is worth it. I forget whose quote it is, but the quote is, an unexamined life is not worth living. If we go our entire lives believing certain beliefs without understanding where those beliefs came from, without understanding, you know, how our childhood impacted on who we became as adults, on what our thought patterns were, on what our belief system is, if we go through our entire lives without examining it, we really missed out. We have really missed out on taking our lives to an entirely different level. Okay, so breathing here before I go to the next paragraph. Next paragraph on this, in this same chapter. Henry Ford said, think you can, think you can't. Either way, you're right, because your thoughts reveal your beliefs, which attract to you your experiences that are their reflections. So your experiences are a reflection of your thoughts. Something as simple as believing that every, you know, the flu season, for example. You know, there are some people who believe that, you know what, it's that time of year, I'm going to catch the flu. It's that time of year, I'm going to catch a cold. You know, I always catch a cold around this time. I always get sick around this time. If you continue to tell yourself that, then guess what? You will continue to catch the flu. You will continue to catch a cold around the same time every year. That's the way it goes. And you know, doctors, science has really clued in. They zero in on this mind-body connection and just how powerful the mind is as it relates to what the body experiences. And that goes back to your thoughts. If you're thinking that you are going to get sick, your mind is extremely powerful, extremely powerful. Your body is too, but your body is in alignment with what your thinking is. Your body is in alignment with what your thinking is. Thank God our bodies are so awesome that they do, our bodies do some, a lot of things on their own. You know, you get a scrape on your knee, and next thing you know, you have a scab on it. You know, a built-in Band-Aid is what I call it, because our bodies know, you know, to just go automatically to healing mode. But we can either speed that up or we can slow it down according to how we think. Okay, so this paragraph goes on. What happens in your life is not happenstance or coincidence. It's not the luck of the draw. Your thoughts have a direct impact on your life. That is extremely powerful. I'm going to pick up another book over here, one of my favorite books, and it's called As a Woman Thinketh, and it's essentially just, you know, the feminine version of As a Man Thinketh, a book that was written by James Allen. And a woman who was a huge fan of his and a huge fan of the book, her name is Dorothy Holst, she got tired of reading As a Man Thinketh and having to change the pronouns from masculine to feminine. So she rewrote the book, rewrote it with the feminine pronoun and called it As a Woman Thinketh. And my copy of this book is so run down because I have read it so many times, and you know, I just keep it nearby because it's so powerful. In the foreword of this book, the very first page, one of the sentences that just jumps off the page at me, it says, they themselves are makers of themselves. Excuse me. They themselves are makers of themselves. Who we are as human beings, who we are as spiritual beings having this human experience, our thoughts determine who we are and who we become. Our thoughts. And that goes back to childhood. It goes back to what we were exposed to. It goes back to, you know, how our parents raised us, you know, what happened when we went to church, what happened when we went to school, what happened in our neighborhood. All of that has an impact on who we became as an adult. And one of the things that spending time in the silence does is it helps us to peel back those layers. You know, some of that stuff served us well. Some of it, you know, gave us backbone, gave us fortitude, helped us to develop our character, helped us to discover who we are, right? Some of it slowed us down. And it wasn't because it was done intentionally. When people know better, they do better. Every single person in our lives did the best they could with what they had, right? So some of that stuff, though, it serves as an obstacle to us becoming more of who we are instead of becoming less of who we are. spending time in the silence helps us to peel back the layers. It helps us to really examine, you know, okay, so where did this thought about this particular thing come from? You know, why is it that I believe that, you know, come every fall season, I will catch a cold? You know, maybe it's because my grandmother believed that. Maybe it's because my father believed that. Maybe, you know, it's because that's what was going on in my household. You know, maybe you got it from somewhere else. Spending time in the silence affords us the opportunity to hold our thoughts up to the light and examine them and really take a look at them and decide, is this serving me or is this causing me harm? Is this moving me forward with my goal or is this causing me to be on a treadmill, you know, where I am doing the same things day in, day out, week in, week out, year in, year out? Am I holding on to the same goals that I've had, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years ago because I've convinced myself somehow that I can't move forward with this, you know? Spending time in the silence helps us to take a look at that and to examine it and to determine whether we want to keep it or not, okay? I'm still in this same book, As a Woman Thinketh, and the very first chapter is on thought and character. And it says, a woman is literally what she thinks, her character being the complete sum of all her thoughts. That's essentially what I just went into a little bit. There's so much in this book. I'm just going to pick and choose a few of these other sentences that always jumped out at me. This one is beautiful. A woman is the master of her thought, the molder of her character, and the maker and shaper, of her condition, environment, and destiny. As within, so without. As within, so without. What's going on outside of us is a reflection of what is going on inside of us. There's something else in this chapter, in this particular book, that just... in the next paragraph, I'm still in As a Woman Thinketh, it says, thought and character are one, and as character can only manifest and discover itself through environment and circumstance, the outer conditions of a person's life will always be found to be harmoniously related to her inner state. If that's not as within, so without, I don't know what is. And so this book goes deep. This book is smaller than my book. My book is small, but this book is even smaller than my book, and this book packs more of a punch than my book. But this book goes deep into talking about how if a woman really wants to change her life, she absolutely, positively has to spend time in the silence, paying attention to her thoughts, and not just that, actually changing her thoughts so that she is using her thoughts to manifest in her external environment the things, the people, the relationships, the career, the everything that she wants, because it all starts within. Because it all starts within. There's actually, at the beginning of the book, a poem that I absolutely adore, and I'm going to read it to you guys. This says, mind is the master power that molds and makes, and woman is mind, and evermore she takes the tool of thought, and shaping what she wills brings forth 1,000 joys, 1,000 ills. She thinks in secret, and it comes to pass. Environment is but her looking glass. That thing right there is so powerful to me. That is so freaking powerful, because basically what it's saying is the quality of your thoughts determine the quality of your life. The quality of your thoughts determine the quality of your environment. A woman, mind is the master power that molds and makes, and woman is mind, and evermore she takes the tool. She calls it a tool, the tool of thought, and shaping what she wills, shaping what she wills, brings forth 1,000 joys, 1,000 ills. She thinks in secret, and it comes to pass. Environment is but her looking glass. So we can go about our business, and we can keep our thoughts to ourselves, and you know, not share with other people what we're thinking. But what we're thinking will still show up in our lives. She thinks in secret, and it comes to pass. Environment is but her. I'm going to put this book down because I will sit up here and read this whole book to you all. And this show is the Sisterhood Exchange. Okay, so As a Woman Thinketh, I highly recommend that book. It's extremely powerful. It's extremely beautiful and just very, very, very effective at driving home the point of the power of thought. So let me go back to my book, same chapter. We're on page 22. Let me give you guys a number again in case you want to call in with questions or comments. The number is 646-595-2081. Press 1 if you'd like to join me on the air. Okay. On page 22, the second paragraph. The sisterhood of self involves taking charge of your life by taking charge of your thoughts. The SOS requires your acknowledgement that there is a correlation between the quality of your thoughts and the quality of your life. Without that acknowledgement as your foundation, the SOS cannot be maximized. And so in order to really, you know, get the most out of your SOS, you have to accept that the way you think impacts the quality of your life. The way you think impacts whether you achieve goals or not. The way you think determines the quality of your relationships. It impacts everything, every possible thing. One of the huge gifts that I received from, and I call them life coaches, but they were so much more than life coaches to me, and their work has a very strong spiritual foundation. It's very holistic. It goes deep. It helps you to see yourself in ways that you just have never even imagined. And I did this work with Charles and Shakira Taylor a few years ago, and one of the things that they helped me to do was to rephrase some of the beliefs that I had about my childhood, some of the beliefs that I grew up with that were so ingrained in me that you just couldn't tell me that it wasn't true. You just could not tell me that it wasn't true. My family and I grew up poor. You know, we were on public assistance. My mom was a single parent after she and my father got a divorce. And you've heard people say that you didn't realize how poor you were until, you know, you got older. And because, you know, there was love in the house and, you know, there was food, et cetera, et cetera. So I didn't really realize how poor we were until, you know, I started to get older. But there were some beliefs. There were some patterns of thinking that I carry with me from childhood as it relates to poverty, as it relates to lack and limitation, as it relates to money. And in order for me to start to break the hold that those beliefs had on me, I had to first, you know, spend time with them, look at what they were, first of all, before I could decide that, okay, you know what? That really does not make sense. It really does not make sense for me to believe that because I experienced poverty as a child, that has to be a part of my life as an adult. And it went deeper than that. I'm just using that as an example. But Charles and Shakira Taylor helped me to just rephrase things in a way that helped me to loosen their grip on me, to just change the impact that they had on my life. You know, I went from believing that, you know, experiencing poverty was just a natural, you know, occurrence in people's lives, to understanding that, you know what, my mother was a phenomenal woman who really gained access to different resources like food stamps, like public assistance, to help take care of 5 children, you know, as a single parent. And she did what she had to do to make sure that we had what we needed to have, right? So I'm saying all that to say that spending time in the silence gives us the opportunity to begin to look at our thoughts in a way that we may not have looked at before. And if there are certain goals in our lives that, for whatever reason, we have not been able to achieve, but it's a nagging goal because it won't go away, and we feel like, you know what, we absolutely positively have to achieve this particular goal, but for whatever reason, we have just not been able to make it happen, chances are there's a belief system, there's some thought processes that have their roots in our childhood that if we spend some time examining them, taking a look at them, stripping them down, and really looking at them for what they are, chances are we can help to alleviate the obstacle or the block that's keeping us from that particular goal. Chances are. That's how powerful our thoughts are. On one of the shows a few months ago, I talked about, you know, how we think so many thoughts a day. You know, the research says that we think up to 60,000 thoughts a day, and that's the average human being. Not all of us think that many thoughts, which is a good thing. I definitely don't think 60,000 thoughts a day. But if you are not paying attention to your thoughts, that many thoughts can run through your brain because they're on autopilot. 98% of them are repetitive. They're the same thoughts that we've been having day in, day out, week in, week out, year in, year out. Things like gossip, judgment, complaints, all of that fall under the negative variety of thoughts. And the research says that 80% of those 60,000 thoughts that run through our brains every day, 80%, it says, of those thoughts are negative. 80%. And so it behooves us, it really does, to really just take control of our thoughts, to really start to examine what they are. And it goes back to spending time in the silence. It goes back to, you know, when you get in your car, instead of turning on the radio, you know, automatically, which most of us do. I mean, it's just a habit. We get into the car, turn it on, put on that seatbelt, turn on the radio. Pop in a CD, you know, turn on the satellite radio. It's just automatic. So it requires an intention to say, okay, you know what? On this drive time that takes me about, you know, 15 to 30 minutes, whatever the case may be, how about I do it in silence today and just really pay attention to what's going through my mind? We can set that intention, and it's a powerful intention, and what happens is phenomenal. We start to pay attention to, you know, what's going on in our minds, and if as it relates to a particular goal, you know, when we ask ourselves questions, when we ask God, when we ask the universe to reveal things to us, that's like one of the most powerful things that we can do, because when we ask the question, the answer will come. When we ask the question, the answer will come, and it's just a matter of us asking the right questions. Asking the right questions. I talked a few minutes ago about, you know, if there's a particular goal in your life and it's been a goal of yours for a while, but for whatever reason you've not been able to move forward with it, asking God, asking the universe, asking, you know, whatever that higher power is to you, what can I do to make this goal a reality? Show me the obstacles. Make it clear to me in a way that I understand. Show me the obstacles that keep me from achieving this particular goal. Do that in the silence often enough, the answer will come. And because you expect the answer, that guarantees that the answer will come. That's just the way it works. And it's a fascinating part of this whole process. Breathing here. If you're just joining us, you are listening to the Sisterhood Exchange Book Club. We're up to session 3, and tonight's chapter is on your thoughts, your life. Did a brief recap, and again, if you would like to listen to the first 2 sessions, you can go to the archives on the website, and those shows are available there. I think I'm up to 35 shows total. So there are a whole bunch of shows that go back several months that you can listen to. You can look at the topic and see if there's something that interests you. And you can always listen to it at your convenience. That's one of the things I love about this company. You can listen to those archives at your convenience. You can listen to a part of it now. You don't need to stop and go do something and listen to a part of it later. Just pause it. So, yeah, that's available to you. And while you're there, if you would please click on that follow tab, so that I can keep you abreast of what's going on with the show. Again, there's a Facebook page that I invite you to like and to participate in. Make it your own. You know, post things on there. If you see something that's uplifting that other women would benefit from, post it on that Facebook page. If you see something that challenges women to wake up and to recognize how powerful we are, post it on that Facebook page. Make it your own. All right? So let's go back to your thoughts, your life. I put my glasses down. That's a mistake. Okay, let me grab them. Here they are. All right. So I am still on page 22, and I am on the third paragraph. It says, Scripture and science alike agree that what you think about, you bring about. However, this tremendous power that you possess has been sidelined by the noise and information overload swirling incessantly on TV, social media, technology, magazines, etc. We talked about that. Next paragraph. In order to figure out what you're thinking, it's necessary to isolate your thoughts from the noise, from the other noise swirling in your mind, and that requires time, spending time in the silence, which allows you to hear yourself think. Once you begin to listen to what thoughts are running through your mind, you can determine which to keep and which to discard. It's not rocket science. Negative thoughts create negative situations, and positive thoughts do the opposite. What you think about yourself and what you think about life matters. The only way to determine what your thoughts are is to spend time in the silence. Start with 10 minutes, start with 5 minutes, start with a minute, just start. One of the things that I said in the previous paragraph was, in order to figure out what you're thinking, it's necessary to isolate your thoughts from the other noise swirling in your mind. Sometimes the thoughts that we're thinking are not even our thoughts. Sometimes the thoughts that we're thinking belong to our parents, belong to our siblings, belong to our teachers, belong to our pastor, belong to other people. Other people's ideas about who we should be, how we should behave, what kind of career we should pursue. Depending on who those people are in our lives determines how we embrace those thoughts as our own. And it's only when we spend time in the silence and isolate, you know, our thoughts from everybody else's thoughts that we determine which thoughts are actually our own. I have another book that I wanted to share a little bit from you guys. As you guys can tell, I love books. I read everything I get my hands on, and I have a lot of books on the power of thought. This particular book is called What Are You? And it's by Imelda Octavia Shanklin. She's a Unity minister. She wrote this book a long time ago. I mean, like decades ago, probably in the 1920s or something. But it's still relevant. It's still extremely relevant to where we are now. And she actually has a chapter called You Are What You Think, which is chapter 2. And the very first sentence says, your mind is your world. I'm going to let that marinate. Your mind is your world. And then she says, your thoughts are the tools with which you carve your life story on the substance of the universe. When you rule your mind, you rule your world. When you choose your thoughts, you choose results. The visible part of your life pours out of your mind, shaped and stamped by your thoughts. As surely as the coins of nations are shaped and stamped by the mechanisms used to convert ores into specie. That is so powerful. That is so doggone powerful. And it's all basically saying the same thing, but I just like that it's being said in so many different ways. This book is another doozy. It's extremely powerful. What Are You? And this one is probably in my top five as far as my favorite books, nonfiction books, because this one helps us to recognize that so often if someone asks us, you know, what are you, we're responding from the who of who we are. Who are you? But what are you takes it to an entirely different level, because that is going deep. That's that whole, you know, spiritual being having a human experience kind of discussion. So we're going to save that one for another time, because that one can get real deep up in here. The Sisterhood Exchange and tonight's topic, Your Thoughts, Your Life, the number to call in. I have a few more minutes left, 646-595-2081. Next week's chapter is Listen to Your Inner Critic and Then Tell Her That She Has Been Demoted. That is one of my favorite chapters, because number one is something that affects so many, not just women, but because we're talking about the Sisterhood Exchange, I'm going to say women, but it affects everybody. It affects everybody, because one of the benefits of examining our thoughts is that, you know, we start to pay more attention to that inner critic, and we can start to tell her what to do, you know. We can start to, you know, put her back in her place and let her know that she does not run things, and that, you know what, if you're not going to be encouraging and supportive and, you know, help me to make this thing happen, then guess what? I'm going to need you to go take a seat. Yeah. So I'm actually going to go ahead and wrap things up, since you guys haven't called in with questions or comments or brilliant insights. I am going to bid you a beautiful good night, and I will see you all next week at the same time, 7:30, for the Sisterhood Exchange Book Club. Again, if you have not gotten your book, you can go to Amazon for either the e-book or the paperback. And if you would like to have your paperback autographed, you can order it from my website. And then I will, of course, autograph it and get it out to you with the quickness. So, oh, yeah, and my website is michellehollinger.com. Okay? So thank you again so much for joining me for this third session of the Sisterhood Exchange Book Club. I am your very, very grateful host, Michelle Hollinger, and I will be with you guys again next week for more of this powerful discussion. Peace. Thank you.